Today on the Asymptote Podcast, we continue with our exploration on the relationship between language and dance by talking with translator and frequent Asymptote contributor Sawako Nakayasu about Costume and Foss, a primer of darkness for young boys and girls, her 2015 translation of A Beguiling Artifact, a notebook full of a dancer's notations of a choreographer's work. But first, remember to check out our upcoming July issue, which will be out later this month. My lips are sealed, but I've taken a look, and it's another issue not to miss. Make sure to head to asymptotejournal.com. I'm Dominic Boyle, and this is the Asymptote Podcast. When you open the book Costume and Foss, you're confronted with an enchanting mix of text in the original Japanese and an English translation, set into handwritten diagrams and drawings. And as you leaf through, phrases and characters arise and recontextualize themselves through repeated appearances. It's a notebook of a work in progress. The dancer was Moe Yamamoto, and the choreographer was the legendary Tatsumi Hijikata, founder of the Japanese dance form known as Buto. The notebook was found by Elena Glusman of Ugly Duckling Press in Brooklyn, New York, who in turn knew that Sawako Nakayasu was just the person to translate it.
There was something really deeply attractive about the project for me as a translator. It was an insanely busy time in my life, but I got this email. I remember this email so vividly. The email subject said, "Don't say no." And it came from, you know, it came from Yelena Glusman, who is also a friend of mine, and she's the editor of this PlayScript series, and she was actually my colleague, so she knew the life I was living, and she knew how impossible it was for me to do things, but she also knew that it was the perfect thing for me to do because of my background in dance and my interest and experience in translating experimental poetry. So when I saw it, when I kind of wrapped my head around what it was, I couldn't say no. It was just so interesting and fascinating as a space to enter as a translator.
Can you describe the notebook a little bit?
So the book is made up of, well, the book is literally the notebook of Moe Yamamoto, the dancer. So the bulk of it is the notes of the choreography to the dance. The new music score is a very useful parallel to think about this text because it's very, on one hand, it's very precise and indicative of what is to be performed. And then, you know, and then there's a sort of larger conversation about what those markings and notations mean.
So who were Tatsumi Hijikata and Moe Yamamoto?
Okay, so Tatsumi Hijikata is one of the major figures in Buto dance. He's a choreographer and had his own company. And Moe Yamamoto was one of his principal dancers. So that's their relationship. It's interesting in the sense that the form of the book attributes authorship to one person, but in the process of engaging with the text, you can sort of see how the language is originated by Hijikata, but then it's spoken and then transcribed by hand into Moe Yamamoto's notebook. And so in that literal sense of having written the notebook, it's his writing, it's his handwriting, it's his transcription of something that was spoken to him.
So it sounds like you're sort of saying that Moe Yamamoto is almost like a medium for this work in multiple ways.
Yeah.
Because he was the one that the dance was being choreographed on, and also the one that was producing this book. So he is almost the translation medium itself.
Yeah, that's beautiful the way you put it, to imagine this, you know, human thinking body as a medium of translation, very much so. And partly it comes from the fact that Hijikata had already choreographed a lot of work prior to Moe Yamamoto joining the company. So there was a whole existing vocabulary that existed in Hijikata's mind before Moe jumped in. And so all of this is being communicated with a combination of movement and images. Like he would have these, you know, like clippings of paintings that would be, you know, informative. He also had a lot of drawings and then language to put all of that together. So all of that gets communicated to Moe Yamamoto.
How do you understand Buto?
Okay, yeah. One of the things that's really striking to me about Buto is that it's a relatively contemporary Japanese dance form that is not based on the Western tradition of dance. It arose in Japan after the war and kind of embraces a sort of, I don't know, it's kind of associated with a darkness of the spirit and movements that have a vocabulary that's based in a sort of corporal syntax that is internally generated rather than the imposition of particular shapes or movements, forms, the way we kind of typically understand dance from the ballet tradition, for example.
And so what does that look like in the end?
Oh, good question. Yeah. What does it look like? People move, they tend to move slowly. The impulses that generate motion are a combination of sort of emotional, psycho, like somatic, experiential, gestural elements of movement. From the outside, they don't look like choreography as we know it in a Western tradition. However, it turns out that it is actually very, it has a lot of parallel with choreographic structures that do feel familiar in other contexts. You know, there are solo movements and group parts, and the staging tends to be minimal. Often it's in a sort of black box kind of space. There's a theatrical element that's very stylized, some of it involving kind of a white face masking element. It's often seen as, or perceived or felt as grotesque. It's not beautiful in conventional ways we use that word. There's a visceral element to it.
In order to understand the corporeal syntax of the dance, as represented on the page, Nakayasu worked closely with Yamamoto, sitting down with him and going over portions of the notebook together.
It was very illuminating in the sense that we were able to look at a piece of language, look at a little fragment, and he sort of broke down the syntax for me, and he would say, oh, here's this movement looks like this, and he did that physical movement, and then oh, here's this adjective, or, you know, or even a proper noun or something that modifies that movement, and then he'll go, okay, now here's this movement like this. And so it's a variation on core syntactical units. And when he did that for me, it all locked in. I was able to see how the language in the book translated into the language of the dance. And that was what I needed to feel comfortable translating this work. I guess really, I keep saying the word syntax, but it really is a particular syntax that is being performed.
Do you have any examples of that that you could point out, like, or that you remember?
The syntax of the dance is not replicated in the text, because the text, the translated text, contains so many different kinds of information. So, you know, some of them will list a sequence of movements, but then within that you have these sort of brackets and markers that indicate phrasing. So I guess that's a little bit of syntax. But then in addition to that, you have modifiers that describe more precisely how you should be performing that particular phrase. So I'm looking at the page 33 in the top. It's like fauterie, raise the face. So there's already a kind of face connected to fauterie. So there's fauterie as an image. Raise the face, that's a very specific motion. Stand and go with girl with flowers. Play the bugle. These are all, these are sort of instructions. But then around that, you have oriental interesting what that means to somebody who is Japanese. There's also quickly that's crossed out. There's low and an arrow. There are diagrams. There's this folding fan that's kind of on both sides of the page. And by the time you say folding fan, even though that's an object, it's an object that has enough specificity that you can envision a motion connecting to that. And then there's an angel doing something on Foss, person who kisses, person who is rotated. So then, and then woman of the flame. So there are these other characters that enter.
Well, I was getting the sense from when you were describing it, though, that this is a very spatial text in that it's dealing with dance, but also the organization of the text on the page also has a certain syntax to it and importance.
That's a good point. Definitely. And that's also why the text needs all those diagrams and circles and arrows and brackets, because those markings are part of that syntax, too. The other thing that was really interesting that we did was that so myself and Yamamoto-san and Morishita-san, who's the curator of the Hijikata Archives at KO, we all sat down in front of a video of that piece, having looked at the text and kind of, you know, trying to identify what part of it, the text it was, and we looked at the dance, and it was really interesting to sort of watch Yamamoto's reaction and sort of memory, and to have him kind of describe to us how different the final product was, because that notebook existed in a moment of time during rehearsal, but in no way does it represent the final product of the dance that was performed. So it's, to me, it's really kind of a magical text that really captures an ephemeral moment in the process of making something. And I think Hijikata talks about this too, about how you have these structures and choreographies, but the state of mind of performance is its own consciousness in itself. So at that moment, it's no longer about staying true to the precise script as it was written, but there's a sort of overflowing energy and consciousness that arises out of the performance.
Which actually brings me to another question I had. In your translator's introduction, you mentioned that in your translation, you tried to be as close as possible to the original text, you know, which is, I think, a phrase that is often heard in this context. But, you know, we already discussed that this text itself is contingent in nature. So what does that mean in the context of a text like this?
To try to stay close to the original is, you know, it's an ideal that I've worked with in other more conventional translations too. And this likewise, I'm not being playful. I'm not experimenting. I'm really looking at the words and trying to understand them for what they are. Usually when I'm translating something that's just regular prose or something, you're breaking apart the syntax of a sentence in its conventional grammatical forms. Whereas when you look at this particular set of language, it's a combination of directions, instructions, like physical instructives, with a lot of references. So there are a lot of proper nouns. There are a lot of artists being referenced, and specific paintings by specific artists, and those in the vocabulary of Hijikata's universe, they correspond to movement. Some of the language comes from Japanese folklore. Some of it comes from Western historical contexts. Like, you know, there's a little bit of like Greek mythology, and there's surrealism, and so in the translation, I wanted to create a space that allowed all of those things to exist and potentially be true to the way those elements would register to a Japanese audience. And the language too is not always decipherable.
This indecipherability is not necessarily something which could or should be avoided. The notebook itself is in constant balance between specificity and allowing for the scoring and development of space.
Within this sort of spread of language is a kind of whole theater kind of compilation. So sometimes it's not just the movement, sometimes it's the sort of set or the props or staging, or you know, like all of the elements are really holistically considered.
What was your, if you could just sketch quickly, your process like in approaching this translation?
Yeah, I mean, because the project is so unusual, my process was different too. And because we were working with this institution, the KO Archives, they were able to produce a couple of things. So they took the notebook pages and copies of the pages, and they would mark off sections in each page and then label them. And then they created an Excel file. So by the time they handed the translation to me, there were these two documents. There were the images of the handwriting with the blocked parts, and then there were the transcribed Excel sheet fragments. And I've never done a translation like that before. I've never really translated in an Excel file. What I've done more of is a translation of poetry, which, you know, has just different struggles and challenges around the lines and the less concrete aspects of the poem. So once I got into the Excel file, it was kind of a mechanical process at the same time that I was needing to understand the larger picture. So even as I'm going through like box by box, I have my eye out for the large view of what was happening in this text and what the patterns were and what elements related to each other.
Was that challenging to try to get a coherent view of the text as a whole, approaching it so granularly?
Yeah. The thing I love about translation, and maybe in particular the things I choose to translate, is that each text is so distinct and operates with its own logic. And so it's really a process of getting inside that logic and understanding it. And what that is it takes time. It just takes time. I need to put in the time to spend with the material and internalize it to some degree and learn what its operating elements are so that I can apply it to the whole. It's just layer after layer after layer of translating with different focus each time.
I also asked Nakayasu how the reader should approach the book as well.
The book it's possible to read it chronologically from the beginning to the end, with the understanding that it's not necessarily a perfect parallel with the chronology of the dance as performed. I think this book works on multiple levels. I think you can read it. I mean, and in fact, I read it for the most part at the language level too, because I don't necessarily have a Buto vocabulary embedded in my psyche. I hesitate to say poetry because it does feel very different from poetry. In a way, it almost feels like a cop-out to call it poetry just because it doesn't look or smell like prose or like anything we know how to articulate, but it's not really poetry. I think it really is more a notation because, you know, I mean, it's one of the things that's very interesting is that a notebook is a very personal and private document. And so the fact that Yamamoto-san was willing to share it with us and let us make a book of it and present it in a public format it's an interesting opening, and it's a sort of space of literature that's a little bit unusual. My name is Sawako Nakayasu. I'm Japanese American. I was born in Japan, but spent most of my life in the States, also living in Asia for some time. I write and translate mostly poetry from Japanese, and I also have a background in music and dance and performance.
Thanks for listening to this week's Asymptote podcast. Remember, you can always find more literature and translations from around the world at asymptotejournal.com. I'm Dominic Boyle, and thanks for listening.